was January 8th, 2008. It was near sunset. Ricky Sorrells had been hunting. He was walking through some very thick brush. And then it happened.
Right up here are some briars, and I got tangled up in these briars, and I made a whole lot of noise, so I really slowed down, and when I got tangled up in the briars, my head was down, and I stopped, and when I did, my head went up, and I was in the process of taking another step. When I looked up, and there it was, and this thing was huge. It was so big that I couldn't see the edges through the canopy of the trees. I couldn't see past it. I started looking at it. All the details, there was no bolts, no rivets, no welded seams. It was smooth. It was like a barn gray. It wasn't a shiny gray. It had cones protruding going up into it, bigger at the bottom, going up to smaller at the top. It actually, it takes off like this. In my mind, I would have thought it would have raised up to take off for some reason, but it didn't. It remained flat and took off at a 45-degree angle, and that was it.
It's hard to believe that Stephenville and the UFO incident that happened down there was 4 years ago, in 2008, this week. Angela Joyner will be joining us in just a second. Just as the Stephenville UFO story rose to the top, actually it hit the major media like a comet, Angela Joyner and her career changed as well. She was working as a reporter at a small town newspaper, and this story broke right around her, and within a couple of weeks, she was on the Larry King Show and a few other national programs. So I thought it'd be interesting on the fourth anniversary to bring on Angela Joyner. And she also has the man who is responsible for her finding out about the story, Steve Allen, a local pilot in that area, who saw the incident at just before sunset. And he called the newspaper and talked to Angela. And the rest is history, as they say. So let's find out the true story about how the Stephenville UFO story became a major story just like that. I think you'll find it interesting not only about the UFO news and information we're about to find out about, but also just the way it works in the major media and how things, skyrocket sometime. Overnight successes. And here she is, Angela Joyner, an overnight success for sure. Are you on the line from Texas?
I'm here, Jerry. I think we're calling Steve.
You are so right, Angela. Steve Allen is on the line as well. He's the man that called you and reported this incident. Hello, Steve.
Yes, sir.
Angela, how are you doing?
Well, Jerry, I'm doing really, really well this fine new year. We've gotten a lot of rain here, and as you know, Texas has been a very drought stricken state, a lot like Oklahoma, I think, and boy, we've had it the last 2 days, lots of good rain.
Yeah, we actually got some snow too, Angela. Anyway, Steve, welcome to the show too.
Good, how you doing? Good. Well, where are you located at?
I'm in Oklahoma. That's the reason she gave the forecast for the state.
Good state, Carl. Good, then. Come on.
Well, I must tell both of you, it just doesn't seem like it's been 4 years. Seems like it was yesterday almost. How about to you guys, both of you? Does it seem like it's been 4 years?
Well, to me, it's gone by pretty quickly. At first, this mass sighting really garnered a lot of attention, worldwide attention. And, it died down for a while, but usually around the anniversary, we do get some interest again. So it's gone by fairly fast, I would say. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, time flies when you're having fun. I keep trying to make it into 3 years, but the math is a little fuzzy, so it says it's four. So it seems like it was yesterday. Everything that's still burned into my brain as far as what happened. So
now, Steve, you contacted Angela, or Angela Did you? How did this work? How did the thing get started between you two?
Yeah, I know. I called the newspaper the next morning and they said, "Well, we did a story, and you want to talk to one of our reporters?" I said, "Do it. Maybe somebody has a picture of it, and they possibly can call me." So, like an idiot, I put my phone number in the paper, and the next thing you know, I've got all phone lines lit up, everything going on. So, it just exploded from that point.
Steve actually called me at the newspaper, and he called the very next day. He saw this on the evening of January the 8th, 2008. He called me January the 9th. And one of the things that I noticed as he was talking to me, he was a pilot. He'd been a pilot for more than 30 years. I'm thinking, you know, this guy should know what's in the sky. And plus, he had three other people that were with him that were willing to go on the record with me. And I did a little checking on Steve. I called the airport. He told me that he kept his plane at the local airport. And I knew some of those guys out there. And I got I called the manager. And he goes, "He's called you too?" He said, "We've been trying to help him figure out what this was all morning." So I thought, well, you know, he's already called the airport, and it seems like a story that the community would enjoy. That's what I thought. You know, maybe we could all kind of work together and find out what it was.
Okay, Steve, tell us what you actually saw.
It was a few minutes after 6 on January the 8th. We arrive at, I arrive at my old grade school friend's house, Mike Odom, and I just got out of the pickup to light my cigar, and I dropped it on the ground, and they was looking at the sunset. It was a very unusual anomaly of a sunset and the clouds and just the formation way out in the west. And so I dropped my cigar, and I looked to the east, and I see some very bright lights rapidly approaching us real fast, and they were still coming basically straight at us is what I thought at first. And then I noticed that the track was just a little bit off. It wasn't headed directly towards us. So, and all of us fixated on these lights, and you couldn't see anything but four lights on each corner of whatever it was. It was all traveling in unison. Looked like a giant rectangle. To me, it looked like it was about a half a mile wide and about a long. And I thought, well, that's strange, you know, and these lights was intense magnesium type light burning. It came past us probably within a half a mile of us, you know, probably 2,000 or 3,000 foot above the ground. It came still rapidly slowing down. It got to Stephenville, and it came to a complete stop is what it looked like to us. And so it stopped there for a second, and as it came past us, you could see the lights in the back, and there were 7 lights in the back of it flashing and intermittent. Oh, just off and on, different, no particular pattern. But when it came to a stop, these lights went to an arch shape for a second or two, and then it went to a vertical shape of 7 lights, and then it split, and there was 2 sets of 7 lights vertical, and then they burst into flames, and then it simply disappeared. And we was all looking at each other after it happened, like, what just happened? You know, we can't believe this. This is just, it's wild. The mailman that was there, it flipped him out. He jumped in his car and spun out and just took off. Didn't say bye, kiss my foot or nothing. Just, I'm out of here, you know, and he left. And so we went in to tell my buddy's wife, and she didn't believe us. And she says, "I'm going to call Lance, the mailman," and we encouraged her to go ahead and do that. So she calls the mailman, and he says, "Hurry up, run back outside. It's coming back." So we ran outside. Sure enough, here it comes back by, but this time it has 2 F-16s chasing it. And it was even lower and closer than it was before.
Steve, you're a pilot. How fast do you think they were going?
This second time, I'm going to say in the 1,500 to 2,000 mile an hour range.
So it was definitely a red hot chase.
Yes, it was a chase. It was kind of like a cat and mouse game, though. It seemed like it was keeping them at bay back there where it wanted to. I'm sure their afterburners was on. You could see the flames hanging out the back of the F-16s. You know, they was in full pursuit. They reported breaking the sound barrier over in the Hico area, and of course that's illegal, so somebody had to authorize excessive speed for that, and that was the last we saw of it going off towards
Steve,
the east.
You described it as a rectangle just a second ago. Angela, maybe both of you could get in on this. A lot of people said it looked like different things. You and I have talked about this before, Angela. Was it a giant disc, a triangle, a rectangle?
My thoughts is it was just a giant rectangle because we couldn't see a craft per se. You could see right up through it. You could see the sky. So it was whatever was, the way I have it in my mind, these four lights was affixed to each corner of the craft. So I think it was a giant rectangle myself. Everybody's got a little different take on what it looked like. I don't know if it turns, does a metamorphosis and changes as it goes through the air or what, but that's what we thought.
Now, Angela, you did not see it yourself, right?
No, I didn't see it. And I sort of equate the different scenarios that I received. You know, Jerry, as a reporter, if you go out and cover something live or something that just happened, you get different stories on what happened, or simply because people are in different locations, they have a different perspective. I think that is the difference. And a lot of people saw just lights. And, for example, the constable, he was at his home just outside of Dublin, Texas, and he saw really red-colored flashing lights. They were just flashing, you know, all over. Most people did, I think, just see lights. But the jets were a factor also, because several people saw the jets, and if they didn't see them, they heard them. And, you know, we're used to jets going over us here because the Brownwood Military Operating Area is just southwest of Dublin. It does encompass just a small portion of Dublin. And there's a naval air base in Fort Worth. So we're used to that.
I looked up on the map once. Dublin's only about 12 miles from Stephenville, so they're pretty close. Angela, before this happened, were you a Trekkie or interested in science fiction or UFOs or anything?
Oh, no.
Before this happened, huh?
I wasn't interested in UFOs at all. You know, if I saw something on television, you know, I happened to watch something. I really didn't seek out those type of TV shows or anything. I would think, well, that was pretty interesting, and I never thought about it again. I think this was something that was really eye-opening for me. It really changed my own perspective on a lot of things.
Now, Steve talked to you the first thing the next morning, right?
Yeah.
Did he leave a message at the newspaper, or how did that work?
He actually, they put him through to me. And you know, began telling me, you know, what had happened.
So this was the first time you had heard of this, really? I mean,
no, not at all.
Was this news to you?
Not at all.
This phone call was out of the blue.
Yes, out of the blue. And I contacted the other three people that were with him. They all went on the record, like I said. And then the next day was when the story ran. That was January the 10th. And Steve had asked me to include his phone number in that story. I said, "Are you sure you want to do that?" And he said, "Yes, this thing was so big. I know other people had to have seen it. And I hope somebody, you know, had video or a still." And I said, "Okay." Well, when I came in that morning, I already had a stack of messages. My voicemail was full. Steve was at his office. We put his office number in that first article, and he had more calls than he could handle also, and we talked several times throughout the morning, and we were just blown away. Oh my gosh, this is something that was in the sky that was really large, that a lot of people saw. And I was really surprised. I really didn't expect that. And people were calling me saying, Do you know what it is yet? Is this the reason we have the increased military traffic in the sky? Well, I'd been inside the office. I really didn't even realize that. And when I went out to lunch, lo and behold, there was like two Chinook helicopters coming over, and they were lower than I had ever seen them. And I thought, God, this must be what people are talking about. Maybe there is an increased military presence here. It certainly seems so. And there were just people calling all morning. The phone calls never stopped. I mean, for two solid weeks, the phone calls were just incredible.
Angela, as you know, the big element in this story is the radar readings. When did you become aware that there were actually some radar readings?
All right, Glenn Schultz is a retired radar specialist. He worked in White Sands, New Mexico. And he contacted me and said, I'm going to file some Freedom of Information Acts. I was wondering, you know, if you would like to work with me or you know anybody that would. And so it progressed from there. I hooked him up with Robert Powell. And Robert is the national research director for MUFON. And he had been up several times and interviewed people and talked with me. And this radar report took hundreds of hours. They received like 2.5 million bits of data. And what that means is... what'd you say?
I said there's 25 million...
I think it was 2.5 million bits of data, and they had to go through it line by line by line. It took hundreds of hours. And the way it ended up is it matched eight of the witnesses on the ground in the time that they said they saw it, in the direction that they said they were looking. There was an unknown on the radar. And this is after filtering out all the skin paints, locating the 10 F-16s that were out that night. It was just incredible.
And it didn't have a transponder, by the way.
Yes, and this unknown, we asked for data from 4 o'clock till 8 o'clock. And if we had to do it over again... we would have gone much later than that, but because Steve's sighting was about 6:15 or so, you know, we thought a couple of hours before, a couple of hours afterwards.
6:15 in the evening. Steve, was it dark already?
No, it wasn't, Jerry. It was the sun had just basically set. You still had a little twilight, so you could still see very well. It was unlimited visibility, I might add, that day. Nice and calm, and it was the first good day we had had. It had been a blast of cold weather, so we was kind of outside enjoying just being able to get out of cabin fever there, per se. So,
Steve, I guess there's a logical reason why people gave different descriptions of what the craft looked like. Evidently, the light patterns were changing all the time, morphing, so to speak, into different shapes. Is that what it looked like?
Yeah, it did. It had the 4 original lights on each corner that we saw, but when it came past us, it had 7 lights in the rear. And then when it came to a stop in Stephenville, that's when it started going through a change of some sort, and it went to the arch shape and then a vertical, and then those caught on fire is what it looked like in the sky, a giant square fireball.
So this thing was big. It was gigantic.
It was large, yes.
Steve, what would you equate the size to?
Because the property or the land out there is a lot of farmland, and it's kind of gridded off, and that's where I came to the conclusion it was like a half a mile wide and about a mile long. It was just massive. It was unreal how big it was. I knew this was an opportunity of a lifetime, so I was watching it very carefully so I could, just for my own purpose and recall and time-wise and what we were seeing.
And so you're saying it came to a complete stop? Wow, that's something that big? Just stopped?
Well, I thought it did, but the radar report claims it slowed down to like 18 or 20 miles an hour.
Well, 20 miles per hour compared to 1,500 or 2,000 miles per hour seconds before. I guess we could say it stopped.
Well, I'd like to add something here if I could, Jerry. There were three police officers that also saw this thing. And one of them was able to get a radar gun lock on it. And he said he was sure it was a good lock. And he clocked it at 27 miles per hour. Now, and as far as the radar report, you know, at times it was going as fast as 2,000 or 2,100 miles per hour, I believe. So we were just very perplexed. You know, what can go that fast and then slow down like that without falling out of the sky? And the reason this object caught the police officer's attention is he thought he, in his peripheral vision, he saw it at first, he thought it was something about to crash. And he thought it was like a big, big plane about to crash. And that's what caught his attention, you know, in the first place. So it was really unusual the way this thing could really speed up. And at one time in the radar report, it was going 500 miles per hour and in 10 seconds dropped back to 37 miles per hour.
Unbelievable.